You're listening to Two Girls, One Crossword.
Hi, everyone.
We're back refreshed.
We're refreshed. We are back. My video looks a little bit weird, so I'm going to just... Yeah, we're back. What else is there to say?
Right. We took a little break. We, for various reasons, during our break, we went to the AKC dog show.
Probably the most important thing I've done in a very, very long time.
Right. It was very fun. I suggest that look up to see if there's any dog shows coming to your city, because they happen all over. So right. If you like dogs, and in this case, it was also a cat show, that's a very fun thing to do on a weekend. You get to go and see everyone with their purebred, very pampered
highly
dog.
Trained. Yes. Pampered, right. Trained very well. Grace, you've been going for a while, right? Like, you used to go as a kid.
Right. My mom used to take me as a kid all the time. We loved it. And, you know,
I didn't even know you could go, you know?
Right. I mean, there's people in the audience there. You don't have to be, like, a dog owner. I feel like it's probably fun for them that it's people who, like, aren't related to the dogs or, like, who aren't also in the industry just coming to watch.
The average lay people coming by to see. I think that's, like, the thing that I learned from this is that, well, there's two things. One, you don't, like, first of all, you can go. You can buy tickets and you can go. I didn't know you could go to the dog show. You can go. Second of all, start young. I feel like I have missed a potentially huge part of what could have been a huge part of my childhood. I miss this because my parents didn't take me to the dog show. Are you kidding me?
If you're out there and you have kids, take them now. Just so they can get their first taste. But also, I was thinking we need to watch the televised dog show. I think it's in December.
Okay, so perfect.
Kind of like a Super Bowl type themed thing. You know, hosting? Like everyone gets together and yes, I'll host.
Amazing.
We'll have hot dogs to eat.
Hot diggity dogs. Amazing.
That's what we took our break doing. And now we're back and we're here to host.
That was the only thing. We had to have weeks to prepare mentally for that.
Emotionally prep before and then decompress after. But now we're back with this podcast, Two Girls, One Crossword. I'm Grace Topinka.
I'm Chelsea Rowan. This is your favorite weekly podword, cross cast. My God. And it's not weekly per se, but you just have to kind of like believe that it's weekly, you know?
That's more just like an idea that we float out there.
yeah, exactly. And like it works as our tagline. So it's staying for now.
We could just say your favorite podword crosscast.
We could. Your favorite podword crosscast. I don't know what is going on with me in that word right now, but.
It's a tongue twister. But
certainly is.
Shall we get in? I feel like I did run a poll.
I feel like you did run a poll.
It was so long ago, it's hard to say.
It's so long ago.
Oh, yeah. I asked, which of these fiber arts have you done? Because you did yours on macrame.
Right.
So options were macrame, crochet, knitting, cross stitch, embroidery, sewing, tufting, and then none.
Ooh.
Well, a lot of these didn't get votes, but the number one most popular fiber art was cross stitch.
Interesting.
In second place was knitting.
Okay.
And then in third place was sewing.
Oh my God, crochet is not even in the top
three. We didn't vote because we would be crochet.
Right.
But yeah. So I guess cross-stitch is the most popular. I think some people do cross-stitch in school.
I think you're right. I actually saw someone we work with, their child is learning cross-stitch, and he's in first grade or something. And I'm like, not for nothing, but when Alex taught me how to cross-stitch, I was like, this is kind of, it's not that it's hard, you know, but it's very precise, you know? And
I think when you're little, you might start on like a much bigger grid, you know? So it's like... Not
you know what
tiny.
I used to do as a kid? Fiber arts. Do you remember those like kits to make
like pot holders?
No, they were like carpet squares, basically. Like you would take small pieces of yarn. They were pre-cut for you, and it was almost like crochet. You had like a hook, and you put it through like a little mesh
I know what you're talking about, but I never had those.
I don't remember what it was called or what you would consider that now, but you had a little hook and you made like, you know, I made like a dog sitting on grass or something.
Cute.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I didn't get that into fiber arts as a child, but I definitely feel like it is a good, fun skill to have. And if you start young, like Alex learned to knit when she was 8, I think she first started. And now she can knit like so fast without looking. I mean, it's crazy. So that's another thing. If you have kids, take them to the dog show and get them knitting or crocheting. Stat. Exactly. Okay, people, A-S-A-P. Listen to us. If you're wondering how you should raise your kids, listen to us.
The two people with the most kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, let's not belittle our experience. We were making friendship bracelets, which we both decided on my macrame during my macrame topic was macrame. Whether or not macrame wants to accept friendship bracelets, we are accepting macrame.
And did you have that big book that had like a bunch of different patterns you could do?
I remember taking a book out of the library, but I don't think we owned it.
We had one of those. I remember bringing it like on vacation once and, you know, tying, like, you know how you have to anchor the...
Oh, yeah.
The bracelet. I would like tie it around my big toe.
I always carried duct tape with tension. Me. You know, and I'd be taping it down. But like, I started doing that as an adult with the duct tape and I'm pulling this thing so tight, it was like popping right off.
That's why you make a loop at the end and you put it around your toe.
Exactly.
Problem solved.
Exactly. And did you ever do the hair wraps?
No, I never did those.
Because that's basically macrame of the hair. Anyway, I digress. But if there's a different type of fiber arts that you do that wasn't included in the poll, let us know. We'd be curious to hear more. Like, do you do Chinese knots? Like that kind of thing. That'd be kind of cool to hear about.
Yes. Please let us know.
I don't think we have any corrections corner, so that means we can go right into our hits and our shits.
Let's do it.
I'll start off, because for the Friday, August 25th New Yorker, it was constructed by Alex Eaton Selners. We haven't heard that name in a very long time.
Oh,
this is the constructor that people are like, we don't even know who they are. I don't know if that's still a mystery.
Do people say that, or do we just say that?
I feel like people have said that on Twitter, but... I think Alex Eaton Selners
picked up
is
on that.
a pseudonym. Yeah.
For Will Shorts.
For William Shorts. Billiam Shorts, if you will.
Billiam Tall.
What if that was his real name? Anyways, because I saw Alex's name, I was like, gotta cover the puzzle. I liked the opener of this puzzle, WannaCross, attend uninvited, and the answer was crash. I've always wanted to crash a party. And I have crashed a party, but like, I was really drunk at the time and I don't exactly remember it, but it was a lot of fun. And we got into a fight at the beer pong table.
Oh,
not like a
fist
fight.
Right.
But anyway, this is what we would have gotten up to if we were in college together.
Now my social anxiety could never.
No, but in college, I was like, let's do it. I was crazy. 16 across. Toy that's frequently returned, question mark. And the answer was yo-yo. It was pretty cute.
Nice.
And then 10 down, live for love, say, question mark. And the answer is typo. There are some words that the iPhone always corrects, even though the word it's correcting from is a real word. It drives me crazy. I know that they do it because of, like, likelihood of you meaning the other word is higher than you meaning the word that you were typing, but it's just like I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Right.
But
well,
it drives
I
me
feel
crazy.
Like were, like were, always corrects to we are.
Right. Yes.
Or it's well, or
and
we will corrects to well all the time.
Right.
Like we'll go to the park.
Right.
We'll go to the park.
Bananas. But that's what I have from that puzzle. It was just nice to see Alex's name yet again, or Billiam Shorts. Who are you, Alex? Is this still a mystery? Did we make up this mystery? If you've been a longtime listener of the podcast, you know we've talked about Alex Eaton Selners a very long time ago.
Maybe Alex Eaton Selners, whatever, is listening to us right now. Your secret's safe with us if you ever want to reveal your identity.
Our girl can dream.
I did the Tuesday, August 29th New Yorker by Wynalu.
This was a good one.
Mm-hmm. 18 Across, Stimulating Things to Chew On, Coca Leaves, which I believe you did a, well, you did a topic on cocaine.
I did. Yes.
And I've chewed on coca leaves, FYI. It's very different than, like, by the time, I mean, coca leaves and cocaine are, like, it takes a long time to get to cocaine. But when I was in Peru, they gave them to you to chew to, like, fight altitude sickness.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 19 Across, Business That Might Carry Yellow Pages, question mark. Rare Bookstore.
This was good, yeah.
33 Across, Blue Chip Authority, question mark. Cookie Monster.
Mm-hmm.
39 Across, I learned something. Earliest known land animal to have vocal cords. The frog.
I thought that was so funny. I was like, oh my God. Good for them.
I'm really happy for them. 46 Across, prick on social media, question mark. Eggplant emoji.
Amazing. It was so good. It's so good.
5 Down, record setting career, question mark. Accounting.
Yes.
What I Grace do.
Grace would know all about that.
28 Down, passing comment, question mark. Yes, vote. And then the last one I liked is 32 Down, parents who support dramatic behavior, question mark. And the answer is stage moms.
Stage moms. Yes. Stage moms. Quite a set of group, a set of ladies, I should say. I really like this puzzle. I also liked 15 Across. Damage control mentality, crisis mode. We've all been there. And then 26 Across, punk mentality for short, DIY. It just brought me back to like my 7th and 8th grade years where I was hanging out with a lot of punk kids.
Mm-hmm.
Some way too old, but that's something you learn as an adult. You're like, I shouldn't have been hanging out with these people. But one of the things that we did is we would DIY our pants because skinny jeans weren't in fashion and no one was selling skinny jeans at this point. So you would buy jeans or thrift jeans and then you would sew them into skinny jeans, and none of us had sewing kits. So my first pair of skinny jeans and my first pair of my best friend's skinny jeans, you sewed them with dental floss.
Oh my gosh.
Wild. And we would show up to school in these skinny jeans and everyone's like, these people are wild. And you know, I had friends that would like show up with the big spiked hair and they would DIY the hair dye with Jell-O and like all this stuff back in the day,
right?
But and then I remember when we walked past like Hot Topic and they were selling their first pair of skinny jeans and we were like, oh my God. And then a couple years later, Gap started selling skinny jeans. Oh my. Then it was like, okay, Old Navy had them. We're like, we're done. We're done here.
And it was like the jeggings, too, that were so tight.
Oh my God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It looked like jeans, but you could like pull. Oh my God. It was so. I would take them off and I would have the like, that seam just in my skin. Throwback. But yeah. Let me see. Oh, okay. I'm going to go. Hold on. Do you have another puzzle? Because I have to pull something up.
Yes.
Okay, do one.
Okay. I did the Wednesday, August 30th New Yorker by Will Nettinger. These were two that clues that went all the way across the puzzle. 37 Across. Oh, we're going to get along splendidly, in quotes. And the answer was, I like you already. And then right below that, 38 Across. Corner of the eye sighting, fleeting glimpse,
cute bombastic side eyes.
And then 60 Across, sucker in Sussex, and the answer was lolly.
I love that. Like, and a sucker, yeah,
right. And I really like like, why can't we call lollipops lollies? It's so cute.
I know, it is cute. Well, we gotta start eating lollies.
Yeah, I guess I don't say lollipop that often. And then 18 Down, John Hughes filmed named for a psychedelic furs song. Pretty in Pink. Didn't realize
that. Oh, I didn't know that.
That's all I have from that one.
Okay, so this is crazy. But Wednesday, August 30th, New York Times, Alex Eaton Salners back again. So, had to do this puzzle. Well, here's the thing. This puzzle had a theme where all of the across answers were fill in the blanks and it read out as a story. So I'm just going to read the story that the across answers spell out.
Okay.
And it's not like the answers spell a story. It's the clues plus the missing fill in the blank answers. So for instance, the first clue one across is once blank a time. So the answer is once upon a time, for instance. Okay. So bear with me as I click through and read this. Once upon a time, not so long ago, there was a girl named Ava. Ava's sole joy was her prized oboe. She had honed her skill in band, despite sitting next to the noisy clarinets, which were an added distraction. One day after school, Ava called a lift. It hadn't come yet, as she muttered, TGIF, I guess, at least the week's over. She was bored with her music, and school was hardly an Eden. Just then, Dana, a bandmate Ava was crushing on, walked up lugging a tuba. As Ava idled nearby, gathering her courage, Dana bent to stow the heavy instrument. Ava smiled at Dana. Would it be stretched to say I dig your yoga t-shirt? Ava asked. Dana's reaction was the start of an era for Ava. Wheezing laughter like an air leak in an old tire and deep blushing were the signals that Dana was smitten too. That was a rad joke, Dana sputtered. I got the shirt from eBay. Glad you liked it. Ava mustered every neuron in her brain and felt her heart skip as she blurted, I'd love to hang out sometime, no lying. Dana grinned, then meditating together in corpse pose isn't an option. Ava wrinkled her nose and laughed. After the spark, the pair bonded in large doses. Dana learned that Ava loved chocolate chip cookies, and Ava learned that Dana loved Much Ado About Nothing. Though Dana wanted to travel to Timbuktu in Mali, and Ava preferred Accra in Ghana, the pair still felt the rightness of their connection. One night, after watching Monty Python, binging subtitled dramas from Asia, and listening to Nat King Cole, Ava and Dana shared their first kiss over cream sodas. And of course, they lived happily ever after.
Isn't that so cute?
Like, that's the direction it went. That's so cute. I'm obsessed with that. That's so fun. I feel like I haven't seen that before in a crossword.
I've never seen that before either.
And I like the little, like, I could tell what words were most likely the, like, blank ones, like oboe, just based on what
exactly.
Probably, like, Timbuktu. Mali was probably the...
Exactly.
The clue.
Exactly.
That was so cool, though.
Isn't it cute? I was like,
yeah.
Oh my God. Like, the words themselves were, like, not super, like, a lot of them was crosswordies, as you just noted, but, like,
yeah,
it was the theme, it was the structure of the puzzle that made that exciting to solve.
I wonder what people thought about that. Because
Rex Parker did not like it.
Yeah, I could see some people really not liking that because they're like, this isn't a crossword. But it's like, come on, we do the same thing every single day. Do something, spice it up a bit.
I know. But people like to, for whatever reason, people like to just prove to themselves again and again that they can do the same thing again and again. And like, I like that too. But yeah, to your point, like, let's
shake it up a bit.
Let's shake it up. Every once in a while, to have something totally wild is a lot of fun. Like when Evan did the haunted house themed puzzle. Like, that was so cool. So, anyway, that was another Alex Eaton Salner's puzzle. Wild. Two in a wee.
Really makes me wonder.
Really makes me wonder.
I don't know if Alex Eaton Sanders Salner's is a guy. Could be a girl. Could be. A non-binary person. I don't know what their vibe is, but I feel like I just learned more and more about them as
who are hear
about
you?
Their puzzles.
Right. Do you have anything else?
Yes, I did the August 28th New Yorker by Anna Schechtman. Great clues here. 18 across, genre of TikTok video that might be filmed while preparing for a night out. Get ready with me.
Cute.
So fun.
I was like POV, but that was not right.
Yeah. Congestion reliever. Neti pot.
I've heard that you're not supposed to use those, but I don't know.
I think that you definitely need to use them with, like, distilled water. 36 down. Leaves in hot water?
T.
And then 40 across, half of a children's book duo. And the answer was Toad.
Oh, cute. My last puzzle, I liked the theme here, was from Thursday, August 31st, New York Times by Freddie Cheng. The theme, the revealer, was 47 down, haven't the foggiest. Or when the first two letters are put at the end, an essential part of seven answers in this puzzle. The answer was no clue. So if you took the first two letters of the answer and put it at the end, it reads clue N-O, so clue number. So for the down answers, for seven answers in this puzzle, the clue number is a vital part of the answer. For example, 17 across, 2009 fantasy rom-com starring Zac Efron. And the answer was again, but
17
since
again.
It's 17 down, it's 17 again. You get what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
Seven down, popular store chain with a green, red, and orange logo. This was seven down, so 7-Eleven. Exactly. Let's see. 27 down, 2008 rom-com starring Katherine Heigl and James Marsden.
27 dresses.
Of course, of course. I'm only going to read a couple more. 30 down, NBC comedy series starring Tina Fey and Alec Baldwin.
30 Rock.
Exactly. Rapper Curtis Jackson, more familiarly, and this is 50 down.
50 Cent.
Of course. So that was a lot of fun.
I liked, because 7-Eleven, they do write it like the number 7, then they spell out 11, so.
Yeah, exactly.
It's correct.
It is correct. I also like the opener here, just because it tripped me up. Follower of November, and the answer was Oscar. And I was like, what in the goddamn hell are they talking about here? But that's the NATO phonetic alphabet.
Oh, right.
Do you know your NATO letter, like for Grace, for G?
No.
Golf, by the way, just in case you need to know.
Golf? I feel like...
Yeah. G is in golf.
I know, but golf is kind of a weird word.
It is. It doesn't really give me G
Should
vibes.
It should be like G is in... gopher or like or G gator. As in giant.
Yeah.
You know.
And then do you know C?
Oh, I feel like I do, but.
You'll know it as soon as I say it. Charlie.
Oh, yes. Duh.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, also I liked 43 from this puzzle, 43 across, I should say. Shade that might be made in the shade? Question mark.
Tan? No.
Fake tan.
Fake
it's
tan.
In the shade.
Ooh, nice.
And then 63 across, you got this, exclamation point, E-W-U-E. I can never say that word. You got this. Mm-hmm. And it's wool. Because remember, with an exclamation point, they want you to name, like, the clue is a placeholder for the noun. So they want you to name the thing that they're talking about. So wool. Anyway, that's what I got from that puzzle. All very good puzzles this week. So thank you very much.
I have one more.
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah, sorry, I have it on my phone instead of my iPad. The Washington Post, the Sunday Washington Post by Evan Bernholz on August 27th, my birthday. The title was Two's Company, Three's a Crowd. So a lot of, I'm not going to go through all the clues, but a lot of the clues had rebuses that had either double letters, like in corral, or triple letters, like bee eaters. There's three E's right in a row. But some clues that I liked were 16 across, genre discussed on Absolute Punk forums once, and it's emo.
Oh my God.
Throwback. 93 across, brief romance, question mark, and the answer is love, spelled L-U-V.
Cute.
And then 49 down was blank daisy, in quotes, and it was upsie daisy. Do you say upsie daisy or do you say oopsie daisy?
Oopsie daisy.
I say oopsie as well. But I looked it up and they're both fine.
Oh.
Actually, Upsie Daisy was like the first version that people saw, but it's like some people turn it, say Whoopsie Daisy, Oopsie Daisy.
Oh, I've said Whoopsie Daisy, Oopsie Daisy. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've never, ever heard Upsie Daisy.
Me neither. Okay. 50 down, court TV channel, question mark. And the answer was ESPN.
Oh, nice.
That's all I got.
Very good. Thank you, Evan, yet again. Should we do the coin flip then? Is it time to move into
do it
our regularly scheduled programming?
If I'm Let's first, see. I mean.
So help you God.
I'm playing the lottery.
All right. I'm flipping the coin now.
Alex and I are always like, we have to play the lottery. I don't know how to play the lottery. That's the biggest thing that's scaring me.
Heads. Oh, I also don't know how to play the lottery. I think some of them you just go in and you buy a ticket and they just give you random numbers. But I think other ones you could go in and tell them the numbers that you want to play.
I think you can always just tell them to give you random numbers.
Okay, because I feel very nervous going in there and asking.
The issue is there's more than one lottery going on at a time. And I don't know the difference between like the scratch-offs or whatever. But I know like a friend of a friend, whatever. I heard of someone in real life who knows someone who won like $5 million on a scratch-off.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. Unheard
like,
of.
Why aren't I doing that? That's what they want you to think, but
I know. But it's what is it? It's just a couple bucks. It's just a couple bucks.
I mean, we're the luckiest girls in the world.
We are.
That's my mantra when we go to Vegas. We're gonna truly believe that.
We are. We are incredibly lucky. We are the type of people that would win the million if we played.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because it would just be like another thing. Like another weird thing that happened to us.
Exactly. You know? Just like a story to have.
It's like, oh, you don't know that Chelsea won $1 million on lottery? Yeah.
It's crazy. It was so random. Anyway, it is heads. So I guess that's my topic. Okay. So my topic comes from the August 25th New Yorker by Alex Eaton Saltners. And our listeners, you guys are going to die when you hear what's about to happen next. 29 down. Sloth or gluttony? And the answer is sin. So today, I was going to be talking about the seven deadly sins, but here's the catch. Grace had this moment of eureka where she was like, wait, didn't we talk about the seven deadly sins? And I'm sitting here, as soon as she said that, I was like, wait, have we already covered the seven deadly sins in our podcast? Because here's the thing. Before I commit to any sort of topic, I always go to our topic master list because we have a list of all the topics we've ever covered just to make sure that I don't redo one because, you know, we've been doing topics for how many years now at this point?
Since like 2019 did we start, I think?
Yeah, 2019. So it's been like
we're on episode
years.
170. So.
Right. So that's a lot. 170 times two-ish is the approximate amount of topics we have covered on this podcast. And there was no seven deadly sins on the topic list, the MASH list. I was like, this is great. And a lot of this research that I did was familiar to me, but I also went to Catholic high school. Like, seven deadly sins isn't something that is super mysterious to me. So, but here's the catch, listeners. Grace, do you have the episode number for what it was? Well, so Grace did talk about the seven deadly sins.
It was in January 2020.
January of 2020. But the clue for the topic was Dante's Inferno, which I was thinking about covering Dante's Inferno in my topic. But I was like, no, I'm not going to cover Dante's Inferno, which is hilarious. But in her topic on Dante's Inferno, she obviously needed to cover the seven deadly sins because that's a huge part of the Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
And well, here we are.
Our first ever repeated topic episode. I feel like we've come up. We made it way further than I thought we were going to.
I know. I am kind of surprised. And yeah, so here's what we're going to do. I'm just going to kind of like speed run through some points of my topic that Grace did not cover in her Infernos episode. If you're interested, the Inferno episode is the same episode where I talked about the winding path of IKEA. So it's like this kind of thematic, like, trail
IKEA
episode.
Is its own version of hell. I'll link the old episode in the details of this one. I just don't have it on
top
me right
head.
Now. I don't know.
Yeah, so let's just think of this as like a recap. Because, you know, it's been 170 episodes. I'm sure we have new listeners that haven't listened to our full catalog. If this intrigues you to actually go back and listen to Grace's Inferno episode, Grace talks about the actual punishments that you would get in hell for committing these sins.
Because it's a different one depending on the sin. So
exactly. So if these sins interest you and you're like, what kind of punishment would I get if I went to hell for this? Just go back and listen to that episode. So let's just get into it. This is going to be a shorter topic for me because I'm just going to be kind of speed reading us through it because that is my punishment. This is my mortal sin. It's fine. Okay. So the one thing I wanted to cover, like before even talking about the seven deadly sins, is what in the GDH is a sin, right? Just like a disclaimer, I'm not a religious person at all. I did go through the whole rigmarole of getting confirmed and doing all of that stuff. I went to Catholic high school, so I've been in contact with religion most of my life. So I have like some knowledge of it, but I'm not a religious person. So some of this doctrine stuff might be a little sketchy. So feel free to DM me if I get something wrong. But what is a sin? Speaking in a religious context, a sin is a transgression against the divine law or the law of God, okay? Or gods, depending on the religion, because sin isn't strictly Christian in construct. Every culture has their own interpretation of what it means to commit a sin, and sins can range from actions to thoughts, but it really depends on the culture or the religion that you're committing this sin in. Now, for our purposes, since we're talking about the seven deadly sins, we're going to be sticking in like the Christian realm, like largely Catholic, a lot of this comes from. But we're sticking to the Christian ideological schema. So the concept of sin and sinning is central to Christianity because the central message of Christianity has to do with the redemption of Jesus Christ, who's like dying to, you know, absolve all of our sins, right? So in Christianity, sin is described as an act of offense against God. Sinning is an evil act that violates the rational nature of man as well as God's nature and his eternal law. Another important element of Christian ideology around sinning is the idea that sins require redemption and reparation, such as penance. So Jesus, you know, had to pay the price to release the faithful from sin, for example. So let's talk about the seven deadly sins real quick. Can you name them all from memory? This is the test.
Right. Gluttony.
Yep.
Sloth.
Yep.
Pride.
Yep.
Lust.
Yep.
Envy.
Yep.
Is jealousy a separate one? Or no?
It's greed.
Okay.
Or covetousness.
What's the last one? Give me a clue.
When you're not happy about something.
Sadness?
More of like...
wrath?
Yes.
Okay.
So those are the seven deadly sins as they stand now. Seven deadly sins are also known as the seven capital sins or the seven cardinal sins or the seven vices, depending on which religion you are practicing under Christianity. The seven sins spur all other sins and immoral behavior, and they can cause a person to commit a mortal or venial sin, which might just be like a Roman Catholic thing, but let's talk about what is a mortal sin versus a venial sin, because I didn't even know that there were different types of sins, so this is all new to me. So a mortal sin, aka a cardinal sin, is the gravest of sins to commit. It is a deliberate turning away from God and destroying of love in the heart of the sinner. A mortal sin is committed in full knowledge of its gravity and with full consent of the sinner's will. So you know it's a sin and you're like, F it, I'm going to do it anyway. Such a sin cuts the sinner off from God's grace until the sin is repented, usually in confession with the priest, which I think is, you know, God's pretty lenient on that front.
Right.
Anyway, a person who dies without repenting a mortal sin is believed to descend immediately into hell. So listen up. Ooh. Yeah. The Catholic Church does not provide an exhaustive list of the mortal sins, but here are a few.
Why? Hello? Why? That's like their one job.
I know. Well, that's because
you it's guys a get church. The gist.
Yeah, right. It's a church. They reserve the right to decide on a case-by-case basis, of course, because they have absolute power. Anyway, mm-hmm. So here are some examples. breaking of the Ten Commandments. And I could not tell you all of the Ten Commandments right now, but there are 10 of them.
It's like murdering someone.
Yeah.
Adultery.
Exactly. Suicide is a mortal sin. Induced abortion, masturbation, rape, and divorce. Those are all mortal sins. So next time you masturbate,
don't work with the others.
Yeah.
But
next time you get divorced, make sure you go repent to a priest, and also the next time you masturbate. Anyway. Some mortal sins are considered so severe that the church could punish you with excommunication. This includes apostasy, which is the deliberate renunciation of faith. So by me saying I'm not religious at the beginning of this. And then the desecration of the elements of the Eucharist. So, you know, that bar in Chicago that sells the communion wafers on, it's the 666 burger.
Oh my God.
That has communion wafers on the burger. Yeah. It's Kuma's Corner does this.
Wafers don't even taste good though.
I know. It's for the crunch. Everybody just needs a crunch.
That's pretty ballsy.
So I'm sure all the workers of Kuma's Corner are excommunicated officially.
Right.
It is called the 666 burger, which is hilarious.
But I feel like if it's not like blessed or whatever, then it's, you know, not really. It's not the Eucharist. It's just a wafer then.
But that's just the mortal sins. Okay, so those are the gravest of grave sins, the ones that could get you excommunicated, or you could descend directly into hell if you do not repent them before dying. A venial sin, or venial, on the other hand, is a sin that is relatively slight, or that is committed without the full reflection or consent of the sinner. A venial sin may weaken the sinner's union with God, but it does not mean that you are deliberately turning away from God's will, God's grace, okay? Examples of these types of sin include gossip, whoops, impatient, double whoops, or a failure to pray, triple whoops, triple whammy on that one.
Impatient? I mean, come on.
I know. But whatever. So Grace talked about the history of the seven deadly sins and where they come from. The seven deadly sins are not in the Bible, at least not in like explicit way, like God or Jesus or a prophet saying like, these are the seven deadly sins and these are the seven heavenly virtues. Like that does not exist in the Bible. Basically, we go back to like the fourth century and there's a monk named Evagrius Ponticus who kind of wrote down the first iteration of the seven deadly sins, what he called the eight evil thoughts, and they were gluttony, lust, avarice, anger, sloth, sadness, vainglory, and pride. And through many iterations throughout the church, eventually Pope Gregory I wrote down his version of the seven deadly sins. He removed sloth and added envy from the Ponticus list. But then fast forward to the 13th century, then we have Thomas Aquinas, theologian Thomas Aquinas. He revised the list in his Summary of Theology. He brought back sloth. He eliminated sadness. So that's kind of like how we get the list that we know today.
It's like, how are you going to make sadness a deadly sin?
I know.
Like,
I know.
It's like, okay, I don't want to be sad either.
Right, exactly. I just...
But it's crazy like,
just don't
that...
Don't be sad. Don't be sad.
Thomas Aquinas can overwrite the Pope. Like
right.
A pope. I know it wasn't at the same time, but.
Right. And I wonder, like, exactly, like, did he just have, like, a pope friend? And he was like, hey, pope friend. The pope at the time was like, this is my new list. And the pope friend was like, actually, this is so much better than Gregory's. Because Gregory, Pope Gregory the First, his name was Gregory the Great. He was the Great. So Thomas Aquinas, his list, took over Gregory the Great's list. Talk about gossip. But, I mean, that's right. A venial sin, so. I'm not actively turning away from the will of God. Anyway, so we're just going to run through the seven deadly sins really quickly. We've got vainglory, also known as pride. Pride is considered the overarching sin, the worst sin of all. All other seven deadly sins and all other sins come from pride, like they stem from pride. Yeah, it's labeled the mother of sins and has been deemed the devil's most essential trait. And I just want to read a quote. C.S. Lewis, you know, the author of The Witch in the Lion, The Witch in the Wardrobe. C.S. Lewis is like ultra-Christian as well. He wrote in Mere Christianity that pride is the anti-God state, the position in which the ego and the self are directly opposed to God. Quote, unchastity, anger, greed, drunkenness, and all that are mere flea bites in comparison. It was through pride that the devil became the devil. Pride led to every other vice. It is the complete anti-God state of mind. End quote. All so right, next well. Time you feel yourself feeling prideful, remember what C.S. Lewis wrote. So we have avarice, which is essentially like not just a desire for wealth, but for honors and high power. Okay. Like you mm-hmm. want a lot. Then we have envy. Envy is about insatiable desire. And it is could be like a sad or resentful covetousness towards the possession of somebody else. Then we have wrath, which is uncontrollable feelings of anger and rage. This is not just like your baseline anger. This is like anger and rage that makes you want to hurt or harm another person. Mm-hmm. So that they make sure to differentiate that. Like feeling anger is a sin. I guess it's closer to venial sin, but wrath is the kind that makes you want to act violently towards another thing or person. So then this is, I'm going to talk a little bit more about lust. Lust, as defined by the catechism, is a, quote, disordered desire or an inordinate enjoyment of sexual pleasure. Sexual pleasure is morally disordered when sought for itself, isolated from its procreative and unitive purposes, end quote. And then Hischer.com says, of all the sins, this is probably one of the most, probably the one on which public opinion has changed the most. Although the Catholic Church officially opposes birth control and same-sex marriage, polls by Gallup and Pew Research show that the majority of Catholics in the United States believe the church should permit birth control and that same-sex marriage should remain legal. End quote. Interesting. Then we've got gluttony, which is the overindulgence, overconsumption to the point of waste. And then according to Thomas Aquinas and other medieval church leaders, there are different types of gluttony. And these are the names of them. I don't believe you talked about these, so I want to talk about these different subsets of gluttony. They're so wild to me. We've got lout, which is eating too expensively. Studios, eating too daintily, whatever that means.
How is that a problem?
I know. I know. It just is, okay? Thomas Aquinas said it is, so it is. Then we have nimis, eating too much. Propere, eating too soon. Eating too soon from what? What's the timeline here? And then ardenter, eating too eagerly. So basically, don't eat at all.
Can't enjoy food in any way.
Yeah, you just have to be miserable. But I feel like that would be a sin as well. Like, don't not feeling grateful for the things that are given to you. I don't know.
You can't win with these people.
Tell me how to win with these people. So then we come to sloth. Sloth has come to mean laziness today. But for early Christian theologians, it meant lack of care for performing spiritual duties. So basically, like, sloth meant you weren't praying. You weren't doing, like, you weren't active in the church. So Aquinas replaced sadness with sloth. So sadness was on Gregory's list, and he replaced sadness with sloth. And he maintained a connection between the two. Sloth is a kind of sadness, whereby a man becomes sluggish in spiritual exercises because they weary the body. Spiritual exercises wearying the body. Interesting. Anyway, so the seven deadly sins are contrasted, and you can overcome the seven deadly sins with the seven heavenly virtues. I'm just going to run through them. Actually, can you name the seven heavenly virtues?
No, even though I definitely talked about them.
That's okay.
I assume it'll be like graciousness. I don't know. Patience
is number six. There you go.
Okay. Oh, is that like chastity?
Chastity. No. Wait, no. Yes, chastity is number three.
What's the name of, we know a girl with this name. Prudence? Or no.
No, but yes, we do know a person with that name.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm just naming out like Puritan names now.
Right. Okay. So these are all great Puritan names if you're looking for one. Humility.
Mm.
Charity.
Mm.
Chastity. Gratitude. This is a good one. Temperance.
Ooh.
Patience. And diligence, of course. So if you, when I was reading the list of the seven deadly sins, if you realize that you commit these on a regular basis and you're looking to really reform your ways, just perform any of the seven heavenly virtues and don't forget to talk to your priest, of course.
Right. Just be temperate.
Just to be temperate. Just be patient. Just be charitable. And don't eat too much, too fast, too eagerly, too daintily, or too miserably. Whatever.
How hard is that? That's all we ask of you.
That's literally all we ask of you. One of the many things. Anyway, so that is a recap of sorts of the seven deadly sins. I did want to talk about the seven deadly sins photo shoot on America's Next Top Model, of course. Did you watch America's Next Top Model? Do you remember this specifically?
And I do vaguely remember this.
So this is when the girls were put into caskets and lowered into like a burial, like a grave, what? Essentially.
Uh-huh.
And each of their caskets had something along the lines of the sin that they were portraying. And I just remember thinking it was such a good photo shoot idea, and it was perfect mm-hmm. to do it, obviously, when they had seven girls left. If you get the chance, you should go back and look at some of these photos because they're pretty cool. And I feel bad for the girl that they let go, but hers was the weaker of the two.
What do you remember?
Of the seven. Hers might have been pride. I can't remember. But yeah, so that's the recap of the seven deadly sins. Thanks for joining. Hope you enjoyed the wild ride of us realizing that Grace had in fact already done this topic. So what can you do?
One day we'll run out of topics. Sometimes it really feels that way.
Sometimes it really does.
When I'm like looking for a topic that week, I'm like, I like these topics, but we've already done them.
Right.
Okay. My topic comes from the Sunday Evan Bernholz Washington Post puzzle on August 27th. 75 across, ping pong item. And the answer is paddle.
We're talking about ping pong.
We are. You Amazing. Haven't done ping pong, have you?
I have not.
It feels like a topic that you would have done.
I know. I love ping pong.
Well, ping pong, aka table tennis, if you're serious about it, that's like what they call it in competitions. We'll talk about Amazing. Where ping pong comes from. But how did it all start? Well, the origins of table tennis go all the way back to Victorian England in the 1800s.
Oh my God, basically, on a Tuesday afternoon.
On a Tuesday, there used to be an outdoor, like a lawn game they would play called lawn tennis. Mm. But then, you know, when it was wintertime and they needed to figure out what to do indoors, they brought it inside, and so then that was like the first version of table tennis. They called it whiff-waff.
Whiff-waff.
And it was primarily played by the upper class as a parlor game. Yes, in the parlor. They used simple equipment, usually made out of cork and parchment. The game would be played on a dining table with books serving as the net, and sometimes the books would even be the paddle. So it was very much like a, you know, kind of thrown
whatever
together.
You could whip up. Yeah.
Right. The first official patent for table tennis belongs to David Foster in his Parlor Table Games patent filed in 1890. His version included strong rackets, so more like actual tennis, large side nets supported by wooden fences so that the ball wouldn't roll off, and a 30-millimeter rubber ball covered in cloth. So kind of different to the ping pong we know today.
Right.
He only had three rules in this patent. I couldn't find all of them, but one of them was don't play too heavy-handedly. Sounds like a deadly sentence. Like, I need more parameters than that. What does
right,
that mean?
Exactly.
Like, don't eat too daintily. Don't play heavy-handedly. But then many other game companies started basically creating sets that had nets. Excuse me. They had nets, paddles, and balls. And the game went by a couple different names. There was Gosima, Pom Pom, Pim Pam, and of course, Ping Pong, which was sold by a company named Jacques and Son Limited in 1901. So Ping Pong is obviously the name that caught on, and it became the most used name for the game, even though it's technically
a brand, and like there was a patent, and a different company owned it in the U.S. too. So it's kind of like how Kleenex is tissue.
Yeah,
you know, it's like ping pong is table tennis, but it's really just a brand name. I forget. There's a name.
What is that word for that?
But I forget.
I know. I always forget.
But this was like in the very early 1900s. The raise in popularity of the name ping pong coincides with the, I should say, the rise of popularity of the sport as a whole at this time. So it was also in the early 1900s that E.C. Good invented a paddle that is most similar to the kind we have today.
Hmm.
He was the first to put a sheet of rubber on top of a wooden blade.
Hmm.
Today's paddles are similar. They you know, are wood, and then they have rubber things over the paddles, but there is a sponge between the wood and the rubber part. But that comes in a bit later, the sponge part at least. But it wasn't just the paddles that were coming together. The balls were too. So previously, balls were either made out of cork or rubber, but the cork wouldn't bounce enough, and rubber ones would bounce unpredictably. So, like, imagine playing ping pong with a rubber ball that just, like, flies in every direction.
Absolutely not.
So in 1901, James W. Gibb discovered celluloid balls while visiting the U.S. And I kept trying to, I'm like, what is celluloid balls? The only thing I could see is that celluloid is a type of synthetic plastic.
Hmm.
He created a 38 millimeter ball made from celluloid, and that became the standard. And we'll talk about celluloid balls turning into, like, they recently changed in 2014. So if you played ping pong as a kid, you probably played with the celluloid plastic balls.
Interesting.
The net and the table also became standardized. So basically all these rules were finally coming together. And then in 1926, the International Table Tennis Federation, or the ITTF, was founded, setting the rules and regulations for the sport and paving the way for international competition. The first World Table Tennis Championships were held in London in 1926. So table tennis is really like a UK sport. I mean, it started there. That's like
that's
when it
so
first
funny.
Blew up. I know, because I always associate it with, like, you know, Japan or
and
other Asian countries. Kind of talk about that, like how it became super popular in Asia. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it really was a UK thing, or London thing, I should say. But after these championships, it, you know, there was a huge ping pong boom. It finally gained recognition as like a legitimate competitive sport. Between the period between 1920 and 1950 is known as the classic hard bat era due to the lack of sponge on the rackets at the time. So they were still using like those original rackets that were just rubber straight on the wood.
Hard bat.
And these early competitions were dominated by English and Hungarian players. But then from the 1950s through the 1960s, that is often referred to as the golden age of ping pong, which I'm sure you already know, of course. But this is in part due to the foam layer being added to the racket. So Japanese player Hiroshi Sato was the first to use this type of racket, and it allowed him to produce more speed and spin, helping him secure the win for the 1952 World Championships and helped him blow people's minds. Because all of a sudden, you know, it was like faster, more spin. People were like, whoa, what?
Wow.
What's the deal with his racket? So then that became standard to have the foam in between the two pieces on the racket. At this time, the sport had become hugely popular in Asia, and players from countries such as China, Japan, and Korea began to dominate world championships. And the rise in popularity could also be attributed to the fact that you could often find table tennis competitions broadcasted on TV. And this was a big deal considering how few channels there were at the time. This was in like the 50s.
Yeah.
But not only was it a competitive sport, it was also a leisure activity, with people buying their own ping pong tables to keep at their homes, just like in Victorian England. This was also the time known as ping pong diplomacy. So political leaders and diplomats would use ping pong games to bridge divides and promote peace. One of the most well-known examples of this was in the 1970s. So picture this. Since the 1950s, relations between the People's Republic of China and the U.S. had been clouded by Cold War propaganda, trade embargoes, and diplomatic silence. No official American delegation had set foot in the People's Republic in over 20 years.
Wow.
But by the 1970s, China's alliance with Russia had gotten bad, and Nixon had publicly written, quote, "We simply cannot afford to leave China forever outside the family of nations." So it was like there was talks of maybe getting back together, whatever. Then during the 1971 World Table Tennis Championships in Japan, 19-year-old U.S. player Glenn Cohen hopped on a shuttle bus carrying the Chinese national team. And they say, like, most of the team was kind of suspicious of this American kid. I mean, he was 19, like, self-described hippie, had, you know, long, shaggy hair in the 70s. But Zhuang Zedong, the team's greatest player, stepped forward to shake Cohen's hand and speak to him through an interpreter, and he even presented him with a gift, a silkscreen picture of China's Hongshan Mountains. Cohen, a self-described hippie, returned the gesture the following day by giving Zhuang a t-shirt that had a peace symbol and the Beatles' lyric, "Let It Be." Photographers caught this incident on film, and the unexpected goodwill between the U.S. and Chinese teams soon became the talk of the tournament.
Okay.
So, originally, Zhuang and the rest of the Chinese players had arrived at the championships, and they were told to avoid contact with Americans. But after learning about the gift exchange, Chairman Mao took it as a political opportunity, and a few days later, as the U.S. team was preparing to leave Japan, Mao shocked the world by inviting them to for an all-expenses-paid trip to China. So the team checked with the, you know, the embassy, and they said you could do it, so the team accepted. So this historic visit happened on April 10th, 1971, and 15 American table tennis players, team officials, and spouses crossed a bridge from Hong Kong into China. So this is just funny to picture because the U.S. team was definitely like a ragtag team of people.
Yeah.
There was the hippie Glenn Cohen. There was a college professor, a Guyanese immigrant, a pair of high school-aged girls, like two teen girls. And none of them were like particularly accomplished at ping pong. The U.S. was not known as being good at ping pong. The men's team was ranked 24th in the world at the time.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
But now, all of a sudden, they were like the most important American diplomats.
Right. You
know? So that's wild. Were followed by journalists during their trip around the People's Republic. They went to a bunch of different cities, and they also played in some ping pong competitions that were called or had the slogan, "Friendship First and Competition Second." So it's the Chinese team, ping pong team, was really, really good. They were basically like almost the best in the world. So
yeah,
they would play, you know, the Chinese players won the majority of the games like easily, but they did let the Americans win a couple in the spirit of friendship and sportsmanship.
It should be a movie, right?
Right. It should be a movie. So, the ping heard around the world, as Time magazine called it, was a turning point in U.S.-China relations and was seen as a key moment in the lifting of the embargo on China and the opening of China to the outside world.
Wow.
So, it all started with ping pong.
Wow.
And interestingly, the ping, I mean, like, they called it ping pong, even though that was just a brand of a specific game.
Right. Yeah, but, of course.
So interesting. Anyway, so I thought that was
I love that story. I love story. That story. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so then in the 70s and 80s, Yugoslavian Dragutin Srbic and an Hungarian player named Tibor Klampar were experimenting with bicycle tire repair glue as adhesive on the rackets and realized that it somehow helped generate more speed and spin. It was called, they called it speed glue, and that like changed the game again. And then starting in the early 1990s, Swedes started to dominate the world championship. So it's kind of like ebbed and flowed, like which country is, you know, dominating. In 1988, table tennis was officially recognized as an Olympic sport. And the first competition was held at the 1988 Summer Games in Seoul, Korea. And the event was a resounding success, securing it a spot in the Olympics ever since.
Wow.
Today, as many as 875 million people all over the world love the sport. So let's end by looking at some rules that have changed over time.
Okay.
So in 1937, there was the lowering of the net height. So a year earlier, one rally, which is what like a match is called, one rally in the World Championship lasted over 2 hours. So they were like, we got to speed this up. We got to make the game a little faster. We got to make it more interesting to watch. So the net was lowered from 6.75 inches to 6 inches. And it worked. There has never been a two-hour rally again. So then in 1986, they made a rule saying that each side of the racket had to be a different color. So basically each, you know, a ping pong racket is two-sided and there's rubber on both sides, but some people have different rubber, like, you know, this is if you're seriously into table tennis, the you have a different rubber on each side. Maybe one side causes a lot of spin, the other side causes almost no spin. But back in the day, both sides of the racket would be the same color. So when a player would be playing and, like, you know how they spin their racket around before hitting, it, there was no way for the opponent to see, like, which side of the racket was coming towards them.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really hard to, like, you know, figure out how to react to whatever they were going to do. So in 1986, they made a rule that each side had to be a different color, specifically red and black, so your opponent knew what they were working with. And you also had the right to inspect your opponent's racket before the game to check out, like, what type of rubber they have on each side. And you cannot exchange your racket mid-game unless it breaks. So it's like, knowing the racket is a huge part of it. Okay, in 2000, the ball size switched from 38 millimeters to 40 millimeters. That was thanks to the new speed glue. The game was going way too fast, so then they, you know, made the ball bigger, and that made it, like, heavier and hard to spin, and so it made the games longer again. So there's all these, like, changes.
Wow.
Like, the game's too slow. The game's too fast.
Wow.
Okay, in 2001, they changed the rule so that games are now only played to 11 points when they used to be played to 21.
Yeah.
I would be mad about that, personally, because that really changes everything.
It, like, changes everything.
21, you have a you could be, like, 5 points behind and still have a chance to
win,
you know, but to 11,
you got to work fast.
Right. In 2002, they created a rule that when serving the ball must remain visible to the receiver at all times. So you used to, like, be able to hide it with your hand, but not anymore. Made it too difficult. Okay, and then 2014, those celluloid balls we talked about earlier. Turns out they are highly flammable and very annoying to make and transport, and very expensive. So since 2014, the balls have now been made out of just regular plastic.
Ooh, interesting.
But they're still, you know, it's still evolving because the newest rule happened in 2021.
Okay.
And I love this rule. So you don't want red and black on your paddle? Well, you can officially switch out the red side with another approved color, like green, blue, purple, or pink.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
Oh, I love it. The coming into the 21st century. I love that.
Yeah.
Because then you can match your outfit to it. Are you kidding?
Exactly.
Oh, especially if you have, like, a team, you know, you're like the blue team or the pink team.
Right.
You know? Hello. Oh my God. That's amazing. See,
that's ping
we
pong.
We actually have a, my family's insane about ping pong. We have a ping pong table. Like, whenever I go back to visit my dad, we play ping pong downstairs. My dad's crazy about it. He got us a portable ping pong set. So we have, like, a net that we can take and, like, play anywhere. The dining table that we used to have, but we got rid of it because our apartment's too small, but it was the perfect, like, party thing, like, where we would set the ping pong net up. You never got to experience the ping pong parties that we would have because we hadn't been, we weren't friends at that point yet, but, and now we don't have that table, but
guess we'll never know.
Ping
pong is fun. One, I always think of this funny story. I have a friend who worked at a company that had a ping pong table, which is, like, I feel like a common thing that companies do to, like, try and
ours
be
does
cool.
too.
Yeah.
It was broken, so no one ever played it.
Right. But then, so he would play it, and then, like, he would get in trouble for playing it too much. And he was like, am I doing my work? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, I'm like, don't have the ping pong table and then get mad.
That's
when
the,
people,
yeah.
Anyways. But yeah, that's ping pong for you.
I love ping pong. I want to play ping pong now. I wish I had a table to play ping pong on. We've gone to the ping pong bar before.
The ping pong bar is nice because you don't have to pick up the balls that, like, fly off. You know?
I know. That's the best part. It's the best part.
All right. But, well,
wow. Good topics. So I cannot believe that I redid a topic that we already did. That is wild. It's bound to happen at some point.
Well, apparently. I'm sorry for you because I know it's like it takes so much work to do all the research that you're like ready to present, and then it's like the air gets taken out of your tires a little bit.
It's all good. We made it work.
We did.
And so, yeah, I feel like if you've got any thoughts on the Seven Deadly Sins, or if you're curious about the original Seven Deadly Sins episode, Grace will link that in the description.
Right. And if you've ever played ping pong competitively, please let us know. You can find us on Twitter at The Good Eve Girls.
Instagram at The Good Evening Girls.
Or TikTok at The Good Eve Girls.
And as always, listeners, please keep curious, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.